What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on X, the coolest site around.
Are we live on X?
Honestly, what is live on X? It's all dead there. But maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcast. Maybe you're listening on Spotify. Maybe you're listening on Apple or Android. Hopefully you're not listening on Stitcher, because Stitcher is going away at the end of the month. So if you are subscribed on Stitcher, I know we've been saying this on all of our podcasts, but we're available on every platform. So, you know, go subscribe literally anywhere else. That's cool. It's cool, y'all. What also is cool is all the great support that all of you give us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Now, as frequent listeners know, normally once a month, we give a shout out to anybody who is at the $5 and above level. Give them a little thank you here on the show.
Great level.
We weren't together last month. None of us were. We weren't all three of us here at the same time.
Wow. For a whole month?
Is that true? Month.
Yeah, it was like two and two at a time. And there was one time where neither of you were here.
That is crazy.
That is crazy.
A fun night.
It was just an empty. There was a tumbleweed hosting the show, if I remember correctly.
Oh, man.
Kept going back and forth across the screen, and honestly, it was the best interview we've done in years. That said, last week we finally read the Patreon thank yous for last month, for July. Now it's a new month, so we're going to read the Patreon thank yous again. This is a shout out to everybody who supports the show again at $5 above. You can support at any amount, $2 and above if you want, that's fine. But here we go, let's kick it off saying a big thank you to Oidis Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Uh-oh, Adam Horowitz, Mr. Crackley.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
All right, why don't you switch that off? Pete and I are going to go back and forth. Okay.
Elena
Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Ashy G.
Beercat PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
Carly W.
Carrie Matthews.
Ooh, Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jeremy Lope.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Demand Ryan.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel Warden.
Danny Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sadaway.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard DeVilia.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John George.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Julian Lobato.
Casey Newhaven.
Kilby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Liwana Thomas.
Lucas Sink.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris, a.k.a. Stray Bullets.
Lost the plot for a hot sec. Yep. But you're about to announce a new chef, like a new pope, Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettenout.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Stephanie O'Hara.
Tamila Rush. Wow.
Taylor Bryan.
Terrible Jason.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Badge.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And of course, Zika's Viral Comics.
Oof. Thank you, everybody who supports the show. We really appreciate it. You can support it too at patreon.com/comicbookclub. For as low as $2 a month, you can get access to our Patreon Slack. Very fun conversation is happening all day in there. You also get access to our back catalog from 2011 to 2022. That's thousands of podcasts, many of whom are not online anymore. And I'll also give a little plug. We started rolling out a Patreon exclusive. We're doing a Comic Book Club news podcast. And if you subscribe on Patreon, you're going to get it early and ad-free every single day of the week, as long as we can keep that up. We'll see what happens. It just started.
That's
a lot.
It's
a lot of stuff to do. You know,
and that's what the New York Times says every week, too. Keep subscribing as long as we can write this news.
The great lady, when everybody is leaving work, they're like, okay, good luck. We'll see if we can do this again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Good times.
Sorry for the people I murdered record. Their name.
Let's see. Kevin says it would be terrible if you had how you learned you were being replaced. Stray Bullet says Alex tried to replace me last week, so I'm expecting it. I did try to replace him by designing a cocktail. Stray Bullet, an actual chef, designs a cocktail for us every week. This week, I just will give a plug. I was going to do it later, but he did a clarified whiskey sour with a red wine float. Ooh. Very surprising.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, very delightful, very refreshing, particularly on a warm day. But listen, we got a lot of guests for you tonight, and one of them is calling from all the way over on the pond. He is a returning guest, and why don't we bring him in here? Ladies and gentlemen, Ramsey!
Yay! What's up?
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Hey! Sorry to interrupt your reading.
Backstreet, back on the show, was on a chat, now having a chat.
Nice.
That's how you do.
What's up? Very excited to have you here. You are one of the writers of Mega City Max, which I believe has already been released in the UK based on the fact that you're holding a copy, but comes out here tomorrow. Is that correct?
I think it's one of the first times like it's been 2018 published in the US, I think. So it's a pretty cool occasion.
Well, it takes a while. It's 2023, so it took at least 23 years for them to get across the water.
Exactly. You got the shipping. Titanic sent a lot of those to the bottom of the ocean.
Well, given that, I mean, we do have a lot of international listeners, but given that we do have the bulk of them, I think, in the United States, can you just give a brief overview of what 2000 AD is? If you don't mind.
Okay, 2000 AD. Okay, first dropped in 1977. It's basically the launch pad for every British comics badass that ever was. Alan Moore started there, Dave Gibbons started there, Neil Gaiman started there, Grant Morrison. Only person who hasn't is Kieran Gillen, who just came out with Phonogram. So he totally... swerve that, but everybody started there, including me. But the thing about 2000 AD, it was very transgressive. Like there was a lot of like newspaper articles about like how it pushed the button and it was a bit out there. And with it grew with its audience, so it became really sophisticated and maybe a bit too heavy for regular for all readers. So in 2019 it released 2000 AD Regened, which is basically the all ages version of it, and it was a huge hit, and they wanted to do a YA version, which Mega City Max is like the first sort of like standalone one shot. So basically what they did was they got five creators to come up with five short stories that like no continuity knowledge required, standalone, so people can all jump into it. And it's just basically new versions of like classic comic strips they had in there, which will probably be new to a lot of American readers. But it's got like creators like Hannah Templer, who does Cosmonauts, and she won an Eisner this year, I think. Yeah. And Roger Langridge, who's like an OG. And me, weirdly, they let me on for some strange reason. I don't know. I managed to blag on. But it was a really fun challenge, like to write a 10-page story. So I went, and it's like based on a Dave Gibbons comic called Harlem Heroes, which is like this really 1970s, rollerball type thing, and the original comic was really gritty and violent, and they wanted something a bit softer, so I went for a haiku meets Dragon Ball with a little bit of Ultimate Muscle. Do you remember that
nice.
Show?
Wow, sure, great combo.
Yeah.
Did you then invent this sport, or was that in the original?
No, the sport was, I think it was a Dave Gibbons thing, but we had to find new ways to present it.
Yeah.
And we went for like a manga type look.
Nice.
Dynamic panels and stuff like that.
Well, to take a step back for anybody who hasn't read it, which means everybody in America at this point, what is the concept of the story? Like Justin was saying, there's a sport involved, there's a lot of rules to it, but it definitely seems to be setting up a lot of different things that can go in a lot of different directions, potentially.
Yeah, I mean, it debuted in Region, so there's already three stories, so this is like the fourth one, but it had to be like a standalone. So basically, this is a Mega City One, where Judge Dredd comes from. Their home team is the Harlem Heroes for Mega City One, and they enter the Mega City Cup, which is like a tournament with all the Mega Cities. And there's the captain is called Gem Giant. He's based on old Harlem Heroes captain, and they used to be a judge. They dropped out and are now leading this team.
Cool.
Can you talk a little bit?
I can't really say that much about 10-page comic. It's quite hard.
No, that's fine. I did want to ask you. You said that there was a bunch of different things that you needed that were tricky in terms of this, like doing the 10-page story, adapting it, etc., or expanding on it. But I'm curious to hear how you balanced. Like you said, 2000 AD is very transgressive. This is something that's aimed at slightly younger audiences. Not that teens can't be transgressive or anything like that, but how did you, whittle off the edges, so to speak? Or did you not, do you feel like?
No, I mean, I just I've read a whole bunch of the old Harlem Heroes comics and all the 2000 AD stuff, and I just wrote a fun sports story that had a breezier tone to it and was really energetic and wisecracky. And I think that's all you need. I think the thing is you're trying to write something that is universal, that everybody can get. And it's for all, I wrote it as an all ages, even though it's in a YA magazine, it's very much anyone can enjoy it.
Yes. Definitely, it feels like you really like took a story that came before and put it in your voice and energy, even beyond the YA of it all. It feels like it's a very you story at the end of the day.
Kind of. I mean, my collaborator, Karina, she basically took on the whole visual side of it, and she's fantastic. She's from Greece, but she used to live in London. She's a good friend of mine. And she gave a lot of the visual voice to the comic. And we collaborated on that. We just bounced ideas, and it was a lot of fun. The original one was very based on British football comics like Roy the Rovers, but they sci-fied it up. And I thought there's a lot of new readers that aren't very familiar with that format, and it feels really creaky. So we just went into like manga sports comics like Haikyuu, which has got 55 million copies sold around the world. It's doing something right. So it's basically just doing something that's more visual and exciting and more leaning towards the team. But it's really hard to fit into a 10-page comic. Yeah. We didn't have any of those splash pages, but it was a lot of fun.
Can you talk I know you didn't set up the rules necessarily, but could you talk about trying to write a made-up sport? How do you plan out that in terms of the panels and the action of everything?
Yeah, I mean, we had to allude to it and write it in terms where it's like a generic sport that anyone can understand. So we didn't want to get bogged down in the rules of it. There were like some subversive stuff I dropped in there because the judges in 2000 AD are very RoboCop. And a lot of it's a bit of like a dig at some of like how it's being written, because a lot of the writers who write, because there's a young Judge Dredd comic, and a lot of the writers write it as like, oh, it's a young boy at a cop school and it's so cool. And I was like, it's pretty messed up. So I was like, I'm going to do a bit of like, if there was like a Robocop school, I'm going to do a scene that sends that up. So there's a scene where there's a flashback where Jem's in school. And they're being taught about, like, they're given a pop quiz where it's all like, what do you do if you see a perp with a H-bomb outside of school? Do you shoot him? What do you do? You shoot him. And they were like, yeah, but what about the H-bomb? And they're like, well, they're just martyrs to the law. We don't, you know, collateral damage is all good. And it's all like just remembering how messed up the whole judge system is and getting into the whole like Starship Troopers sort of satirical side of it.
Cool. Given that you do leave it open at the end, is there any talk of more or is that not up to you?
It's not up to me. I think they might do some for, I'm not sure if they're going to do some for the region title because that's still kicking monthly, but no, I'm not sure. But I'll be happy to do more. I'm busy doing other things at the moment, but I'll be up for doing more.
Cool. Also, a very side question for you. The last time we had you on the show, I think you had just introduced Spider UK, right? Edge of the Spider-Verse? Was it Edge or End? Edge.
Yeah, right? It was Edge.
Edge. There you go. A lot of eat-wars going on there.
Yeah.
Across the Spider-Verse is now on digital, so you can watch it at home. Should I be frame by framing? Can we find Spider UK in there, or is that
They've got the other Spider UK, which is Malala Windsor, which is like the weirdest name ever. Yeah, which is like, let's take Malala and merge her with the Windsor royal family, and it's like the most crazy mix. But my Spider UK is completely.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I have my TV behind me. I'm going to cut out your Spider UK. I'm going to put it on the screen, and then it's in the movie. So
there you go. Nice.
Pretty cool. Well, I was going to say, this is like the first time I've been on a show where Justin's here, so I've got the whole Three Amigos. It's pretty cool.
It is true, and I'll tell you what. Yeah. I was like, Ramsey, I've missed you each time you've been on the show.
Heartbreaker. I don't know what you've been... During those times, I don't know if it's like a pulp secret or something, but hey, you know.
Oh, come on, man.
I was going to say, if you want, since all three of us are here, we could read off our Patreon supporter names for you.
Not again.
Is this a hint? Do you want me to join the Patreon?
That's okay. What else have you got coming up, Ramsey? What else do you want to plug other than Mega City Max?
I'm doing loads of TV stuff now, which is pretty crazy.
Nice.
I can't really talk about. I can't really talk too much about it. Just say it's a crime story. It's pretty crazy. It's with the BBC. It's a lot of fun. I want to get back to comics. I feel like Al Pacino in Godfather 3. You know, I'm moving away. I want it to bring me back. I think it's like it's one of the most exciting mediums you can work in, and I really love it. But yeah, I'm doing other stuff at the moment, and I'm writing a play as well, which should be fun.
Congrats.
Yeah,
cool, Ramsey, always good seeing you. I'm gonna let you get to bed or whatever you're doing next, since it's late over there.
Writing.
All right. Good seeing you, Ramsey. Have a good night. Congrats. Yeah,
take care. Thanks,
Ben. Great to be here.
All right. There we go. Once again, it's called Mega City Max. It is out in America tomorrow, August 9th. If you're listening to this on August 9th, it's out right now. So there you go. We have a bunch more guests, so let's keep going through it. We've got from Panico Press, and I'm probably mangling the name there, Angel Fuentes. Angel, welcome to the show.
Hey! Also reading a comic. I love it. It's a fun bit.
Reading.
This is a fun bit. For anybody listening to the show, they've had comics in front of their faces, and they moved them. Was that worth taking the time to describe that?
Alex, you really paint a picture, man.
I'm gonna keep Alex. A comic here during the entire conversation so that people know that Grid and Gears is out in stores.
Okay.
You can see it. Check it out.
Well, first of all, did I mangle the pronunciation of Panico Press? Did I do it wrong or Panico?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, super, right. Super correct me. Wrong pronunciation. It's Panico, like panic. Oh.
Panico. Okay.
It's Panico Press, and it's we are basically a production studio with creators from all over Latin America, United States, Puerto Rico, and it. We actually started as just a. Have you ever gone to a convention and you go through the small press section and there's a whole bunch of publishers that you haven't heard of and you will never ever hear about them again? That's us. Basically, for many years, we've been like making comics. We're the like the underdog. Nobody knows who we are. We go to every convention, and people just, you know, they stand in front of our table because they're waiting for the next Marvel event on the platform on the stage in front of us, you know.
Right.
So it happens that in the pandemic, when everything, you know, shut down, I started with a friend of mine a podcast, and with that podcast we started meeting people from other countries, Mexico, Chile, Peru, Colombia, and basically it just became like a club, a comic book club, mind you.
Whoa.
Soy Alex, soy Justino, soy Pete. And como, it's like, wow. basically
that's our whole
thing.
You've got it.
You It, you know, Latin comedy always has the funny voices. Anyway, so we became a club of underdogs, because as I and my friends here were underdogs in the States and in Puerto Rico, I'm from Puerto Rico, in other countries, we met other people that would come into our show, tell us the story of comic books in their countries. And then we would just say like, hey, what if we do like a co-op? You know, you send me your comics, I'll send you mine. We'll help you out to show your comics here. You show our comics over there. And it's been great since then. And then we, I'm going to say almost a year ago, we became associated with a publisher called Blood Moon Comics. I don't know if you can see it. So basically, they will be the image to our Top Cap. And and we produce books that are distributed to Diamond and all that, thanks to our friend. And by the way, shout out to Keith Rommel from Blood Moon. Since then, things have gone up. So we're very blessed.
Cool. I was curious, since you are obviously all sorts of people read comics across the board. That's something I think we all know very well. But the comic book industry is not necessarily geared towards leaning towards a Latino audience. This is obviously something you're I'm sure trying to appeal to everybody, but that's kind of your core. So what's the outreach like? How are you managing to capture that audience and outreach to that audience in an industry that isn't necessarily geared that way?
So that's an excellent question, because you are expected to make Latin-oriented, or if you're sort of a culture that you have to make something of your culture. Right. No, we just want to make comics. We make sci-fi. We make supernatural stuff. We make fantasy comic books. We have even YA stuff coming out. And listen, if you ask me how do I come up with the stories, if we put anything from our culture, it'll always come through as you are a writer and everything that you know will be there. But it's not like I'm going to go like, I'm going to make a comic book about somebody waving the Puerto Rican flag. That's not how it goes. What I do as a writer, I have two bags. One bag with some papers, one with the other, and I select zombie, cowboys, and that is Combrick.
Well, and
that's how we do it. And obviously, everybody in the world loves Star Wars, and everybody in the world loves the Marvel comics and whatnot. So we are what makes us a Latin group is the creators, but our products are for everyone.
Nice.
Well, and you say to zombie and Western here, but it's there's like gods in here. It feels like you're also sort of pushing through those genres into a whole other energy too.
Yeah, it happens when you don't know what you're doing.
I think it's I love it. It's working. I love the big push out.
I improvise. I keep getting little papers out of the box, and let's see how it goes. It's like
that's awesome.
I think you're referring to a story called in Gombe, a short called "Full House of Gods." Oh, look how beautiful that is! By the way, guys, I feel like I'm in an ayahuasca trip right now talking to you guys because you don't know how many years I've been watching you guys. And I've never had you guys talk back to me.
And I will say
welcome, man. It's great to have you officially on the show. You know?
Yeah, we usually leave long pauses in the conversation so people can talk back.
So that's where you go. I'm Alex. I'm Justin. I'm Pete, and I'm on this side. I'm going like, and I'm Angel.
That's right. There you go. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Thank you. We're excited to have you on. Let's talk about this book that we brought up here.
Yes,
Gunbreed, which is the new one. It's coming out next week. You said, is that correct?
Next week, either next week or the next. And there's a reason that I can be quite specific about when it's coming. Is either next week or the next? It's because there's this has a few covers. One of the covers is a foil cover, and ooh, we're just waiting for the printer to deliver. And I think we got it. We're going back to the 90s, man. We're doing
cover gimmicks. We're doing everything. It's like
now that we're going through Diamond, it's like we're gonna do everything. There's gonna be a comic in November from a one shot in November from Green and Gears, and it's gonna be back, and it's gonna have trading cards in it. Very X Force number one. So Gunbreed is basically an anthology book. It's short stories. And they're all based in a Western town. It's a border town called Bajo Tierra, but it's a border town between Earth and Hell. And idea is that this guy that you're just looking at here, he's an undead sheriff who protects the town from all the creatures that are trying to crawl up from Hell. So we got a few of the stories here, including the one that Justin mentioned, in which there's a group of gods playing poker in the town, and whoever wins will conquer reality. That's another one of my bags. It's like poker gods. So,
I love
how it happened.
Those two bags are magical, man. That is awesome.
Thank you. It's a 6-issue miniseries, actually it's 5 issues, but there's a 6-issue coming later on because the publisher liked it so much. They said, "Hey, nice. Let's do another one." So I got more stories.
Bonus.
Awesome.
Nice.
We'll talk about what else is coming up. Obviously, we just dove. That's the correct word. Into Gunbreed a little bit. What else is coming out from your imprint?
Well, sometimes the magic bags repeat the themes. So the Western team. I took the same paper as the Western thing, so I got a Western but with robots. This is Grid and Gears, and it's basically a steampunk Western. The artist is amazing. His name is Nahuel SB. He's from Argentina, and we collaborated on a story. He's the one that drew the God story on Gunbreed, and after we worked together, I said, "Hey, what do you want to do?" And he said, I want to do Mandalorian. And I'm like, we can't do Mandalorian. We're going to get sued. And he goes like, I want to do a Western with robots, Mandalorian style. And I'm like, all right, let's see how I can we do it. And so it's about this.
I'm sold, man. I'm in, man. I can't wait.
And he's like a grifter. And it's just this is a six issue miniseries, and then there's a one shot, and then and the one shot that's coming in November, that one has the bag thing with the cards. And also we have Violet Descent. This is my baby. I wrote this story years ago, and this is part of the things that, like I told you before, going year after year after year, trying to move your comics, trying to have it out there. And thanks to everything that I told you that happened, I'm finally able to publish this book. It's an ongoing series. But it's going to be divided in chapters, and then this first chapter has 5 issues. It's already issue 4 is already out. So next month we're going to see issue 5, and then next year we're going to see what will be volume 2. And volume 2, I know, Pete, that you're not much of a fan of the zero issues, but it's a zero issue. Back to what happened before the series happened, and then we finished the second volume and all that. The artists on this, we got different artists. I started with Yvonne Falcon. I don't know if you guys have been were able to see the PDFs. And then we have Naila Aguirre, Richard Cruz, and then we have from Argentina, Nicolas Concepcion. So there's a whole bunch of artists that are coming in, and all beautiful, and they make me look like I know what I'm doing. So it's amazing. It's amazing.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
Well, and also it must be a game changer to be able to go through Diamond, right? Because now anybody can go into any comic book shop pretty much in the entirety of the United States and say, hey, can I order these comics?
Alex, nobody makes those questions as great as you. That's a great question. Listen. I never thought that I would have one day somebody from North whatever something in Great Britain doing a video. There's a comic shop called Zap Comics in Great Britain, and they did a video doing a review of Greed and Gears number 1.
Oh wow.
This comic has I don't have a passport. These guys, my comics have gone through to Mexico, through Chile, Canada, Great Britain, and I'm like, this is just bonkers. And I'm super grateful of all the people that we're collaborating with. I'm super grateful of Blood Moon Comics for allowing us to be True Diamond. And I gotta shout out my partners Amy Jocelyn and Luis Ramos, which are my my partners in this company. And I wanted to share with you really quick a recipe for a drink. It's called the Violet Angel. It was made by one of our writers who's a bartender. Uh-huh. It's got one part violet liquor, one part white chocolate liquor, one part plum liquor, one part cream, and some ice cubes. You shake it, shake the strain, and ready to go.
Wow. That's lovely, man.
Awesome.
We have a new official CBC show.
No, come on.
Yeah, sorry. Every week it changes. Last week it was me. This week it's Angels. Angel, this stuff is all awesome. Congratulations on everything. Congratulations on the success. If people want to order your comics, as we said, they can go absolutely any store in the world. And the next one, well, pretty much any store in the world. But the next one is Gunbreed is coming out presumably next week. So people should check that out.
So obviously the cutoff already is gone. But if you go to a comic shop, you're going to go see some copies out there. Grab them and start ordering to previews. Remember, to order to previews, go through Blood Moon Comics LLC. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to order online, if you go to Blood Moon Comics LLC.com, you'll be able to order copies directly. So if you have missed a copy or two, they'll ship it with excellent conditions. It'll look great. And please follow us on Instagram at Panico Press. We are desperate. At Panico Press, go to our website, panicopress.com. We're on Facebook also at Panico Press. Hey, Pete, one question. I don't know if you were able to see the art, but what do you think of the art
Super tight bananas, bro. It's super tight.
Oh, he's got some bananas. I got props,
brother. I got props.
Those are the official super tight bananas.
Amazing. Oh, Angel, so that's funny. Amazing. Thank you so much for coming out.
It
truly
man, was it was great to have you on the CEO officially, even though you've been there since day one. We appreciate you, man. Congratulations on all your success.
Amazing you, to man. Hear that someone's been listening to Pete. Just a great
awesome.
I'll see you guys next year.
All right.
Next year. Angel. Come back.
Have a good night. All right. There we go. Panico Press. You can check them out at panicopress.com and Gunbreed, as mentioned.
Oh, that was awesome.
Spot that Gunbreed cover. It's sick. You'll see it in the comic shop. Glaring at you.
And we got one last guest for you tonight. She is the creator of the multi-award winning Lackadaisy. Ladies and gentlemen, Tracy Butler.
Hey, welcome. All right.
Rule of threes. Rule of threes.
Keeping the bit alive.
Their precedent was set. So.
Everyone's just reading. It's summer. Yeah.
Tracy, thank you so much for coming on the show. Lackadaisy obviously has been a huge, well, for anybody who doesn't know, has been a huge success for multiple decades at this point, both online and off and in print. And as of the pandemic, you pivoted it from just webcomic into animation. And I think that process, if I correct me if I'm wrong, started around 2020, but earlier this year put out a gorgeous, stunning half hour. Oh my God.
Pilot.
Half hour animated pilot, which is it's like, it's a huge achievement. And then it was such a huge achievement. It's gotten, I think, 10 million views on YouTube, something like that. You went to, and I know I'm laying a lot of groundwork here that you could probably talk about, but you started a crowdfunding on BackerKit. Mm-hmm. And just to look at it right now, because there's a current counter on there, you were asking for $125,000 to make a sequel to the animated pilot. At the current time, with 16 days left, you have $1,197,031.
We set our pie in the sky goal at a million, thinking we'll never get there, but we might as well reach for the stars, right? And that was to fund an entire season one production of animated Lackadaisy. And we hit that after 6 days, which blew our socks off. So had to like scurry and think of some more stretch goals to add there. And we figure, well, if people want animation this much, they probably want more animation after that. So we'll keep making more animation the more funding we get.
That's amazing. The pilot's so great, man. I really enjoyed watching it. Congratulations.
Thanks very much. Yeah, we spent the entirety of the whole COVID lockdown and everything doing that. Had a virtual studio set up. It worked out great. So,
just to give the basis also, I assume a lot of our listeners probably know what Lackadaisy is at this point, but mm-hmm. it's a Prohibition era tale involving cats, mostly. And with crime and music and all sorts of things. And you've been running it for a while in a lot of different formats, but it seems like probably a big leap to then take it from that still comic book page format to make it move, add voices, etc.
Yeah.
What was involved there?
A lot. I did the comic for years and years just as a solo project. And for a lot of that time,
all the voices happening in your brain.
They were just in my head and maybe driving me a little insane. But so it's nice to see them manifest. And I kind of exercise my demons that way, I guess. But it's added like so much more dimension to the project. I feel like to have them in motion, for them to have voices, for the music and ambiance to be there. And it's just been like kind of surreal to be able to be a part of that and have so many amazing artists working in collaboration with me on this thing. And going from being solo artists to having a crew of like 150 plus people has been intense, but it's also been amazing. Yeah. I've never, like, this is a dream come true sort of thing for me. So I'm just eternally grateful for, you know, for the luck that I've stumbled into being able to do this.
Yeah.
Well, and let me say, just watching this pilot, it feels like the animation is amazing, but the pacing, like we're seeing it right now on the live show, like it feels like you took a real steady hand with it and have a real comic book, an understanding of how people like take in comics sort of at their own pace. How did you sort of find that, the way of telling this story?
It's actually tricky to translate comic panels because the timing isn't quite the same. People say, well, maybe comics are kind of like storyboards, right? But it's not really like that. Comics, you're hitting a certain like emotional beat or a certain specific image from something that's happening. But with storyboards, you need to hit every single beat at a given rhythm. And comics don't really do that. Like they change up the rhythm a little bit, depending on whether it's an action scene or a conversation or, you know, a set piece or something like that. So it doesn't quite translate one to one. And Fable, the director on the pilot, this is actually the teaser for season one, comes from a background doing comics as well. So that, I think, really helped us kind of see eye to eye on how we would approach this. We actually had a cut of the pilot that was much faster and much more condensed than what you actually see in the 27-minute pilot we released. And we ended up going back in the animatic phase and extending a lot of the scenes to give it some breathing room so that there were moments for beats for the humor to land, beats for the emotional bits to land, and some like long pauses that would create a sense of unease in places where there was about to be a gun battle. So we wanted to build that like suspense, but most cartoons are so frenetic and everything happens so fast. So Fable and I kind of we're a little worried about our decision making there, going, is this going to be boring to people? I don't know if like we can do this sort of like extremely cinematic, like take your time approach to animation. It's a bit of a mismatch, I think, in like culturally, but it seemed to work and people seem to enjoy it. So I feel like us going in there and adding extra time to kind of pad the scenes a little bit to give it that room to breathe paid off. And I think a lot of that comes from our sense of like comic timing, like making comics. So
yeah, nice. That's it. And that's what I was referencing. Like, it really feels like you give us that time to really sit in it, both comedically, but also dramatically. And I feel like that's such a hard line to find. And
it is.
It's amazing.
Yeah. We were concerned.
Especially to,
like I said,
especially to take that time to be like, this is too fast and really step back. Like,
right.
That's a big swing. And
yeah,
I think
we were watching it and going like, you know, I love like cartoons that are like SpongeBob and things that are fun and frantic like that. But this particular thing is a bit more on the drama side. It's still got comedic elements and things like that, but it just needed a little bit of that space so that it could be absorbed in a bit of a different way. So we just had to rely on our instincts to be like, I don't know if people are going to be bored by this or not, but let's try it. And it turns out they weren't bored. So
one of the things that I was really impressed by, and I think this is present in your source material as well, but the animation has a real depth to it, like literal depth. Like some of the scenes that we're just watching, I think you kind of expect animation to be kind of flat, like you're saying with sort of the SpongeBob thing, if they have a background and you run in front and that's it. But why was that important and how difficult was it to achieve that look?
I guess we wanted it to feel like a fully rounded world, and it is based very much on historic St. Louis. And so we wanted to bring some of that. The comic is very, I approach a lot of the panels basically like illustrations, and I spend a lot of time on texture and ambient effects and things like that. So there's a lot of like, you know, fog and things to create a sense of distance and depth of field and texture for things up close and higher detail and things like that. And like, you know, things in the distance are out of focus. And so we wanted to kind of capture that same thing, but we can't do that with the animated characters. It would have just been technically intense, but also probably visually a little overwhelming as well if they were as detailed in the animation as they are in the comic panels. So the characters we went with more of a traditional, of course, like cell shaded look. They have rim lighting on them and things like that, and a little bit of texture and line boil. But for the environments, we felt like that's where we can really capture kind of the same thing the comic does with the not photo real, but in that vein, sort of illustrative approach to doing a historical setting. So we really focused on that, and the compositors really is where I think a lot of that really came together. The background artists did amazing work. And then the compositors took that stuff and added the atmospheric effects and things that really sold it as this is a real place. There's fireflies and there's fog and mist and, you know, and then of course the sound editors came in and that added even more depth. So, it's really just like the work of multiple people, bringing their sensibilities together and getting that across. We also drew a lot of inspiration from the Xerox era of like, you know, Disney and Don Bluth films and things of that nature.
Yeah, so. You can feel that for sure.
And do you feel like you had that level of attention to detail when you were doing the comic and you were just like, now I'll just broaden this out to these, like, this massive crew that's doing that across all these different disciplines?
I mean, yeah, we provided guidance. We're like, here's the thing, here's the look we're going for. And, you know, if you haven't seen the comic, here's like some sample panels of, you know, the look and feel we're trying to achieve. And then also here's like other visual examples. Like, we would get together with the crew and watch, you know, some animated films and things like American Tail and Aristocats and stuff, and be like, yeah, that's kind of like the feel we're going for. And and just cool. to let them, you know, Secret of NIMH and things like that, like, yeah, that kind of grittiness from the last from the end of the 20th century sort of thing. And so we really tried to communicate what we wanted, and they all rocked it. Like, I mean, they all grew up on the same animated things too, so everybody involved is just, you know, extremely in love with animation. So we didn't have to go to great lengths to explain what we were trying to do. They just brought their sensibilities to it, and we're like, yeah, let's do that. So
you might have just answered this anyway, but I'll throw it up regardless. This is from Derek Mainhart in the comments. Asked, who are some of your animation heroes?
Oh yeah, I mean, Don Bluth, obviously. Yeah. There's probably fairly apparent that there's some influence there, and Disney. Yeah. And God, I grew up on Looney Tunes. They were still on like Sunday morning and things like that when I was a kid. So anything Tex Avery, Chuck Jones, all that stuff was extremely, you know, instrumental in my animation upbringing. And then of course I had like The Illusion of Life, that book about the nine old men and everything that Disney put out, that beautiful hardcover book about animation. So yeah, I think a lot of my influences must have come from that area. Modern day stuff, like, I don't know, Felix Cosgrove is like killing it. Tonico Pantoja is doing amazing stuff. Worthy Kids, Ian Worthington. So many animators out there just doing incredible things right now. Really excited about.
That's awesome. I want to go back.
Go ahead, Pete.
You go.
Pete,
I wanted to go back to something you said about all this stuff living in your head. Was it always cats? Where was the kind of the start of the love of cats?
Of course.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to mention, we ask every guest this. Was it always cats in your head?
Yeah.
Along with all the voices, there were cats. You know, typical artist scenario. There's just things going on in your head. You got to put them on paper to deal with it. But I grew up with cats and had a lot of childhood cats who had a lot of personality, and they ended up forming the basis for a lot of these characters. Like Rocky is based on an actual cat who was just purely made out of trouble. And never shut up, and was just, you know, a constant source of entertainment and amusement, and you know, my best bud when I was a you know, lonely art nerd as a child. So he just kind of formed the basis of this character. I used to draw in my middle school notes and things. I would just have this cartoon version of him. I would doodle to pass the hours in school when I should have been paying attention instead. But he didn't have any context at the time. It just kind of like, these cat characters that I had drawn at that moment in my childhood kind of bubbled up to the forefront again as I started researching the history of St. Louis and things when I moved out here, and got kind of interested in the area and the history of the limestone caves underneath the city and the brewing history and everything. And I don't know why those two things came together. It just seemed like a natural fit, like that kind of, I don't know. It's a story about characters who are very morally gray. And I probably don't need to explain
like cats.
To why cats seem like a natural fit, like gangsters of that era, like Al Capone and things, like they were obviously criminals, but they also had this sort of charisma that I think cats kind of like embody that same sort of thing in our cultural, you know, pantheon of animal characters. So, I think that was why. It's also very easy to make them act and emote when they've got those big mobile ears and big eyeballs and tails that kind of elongate the line of action and things. So it's like you can really play with the gesture and acting in that way. And their expressions really come across very strongly, and their faces are similar proportions to humans. So they can carry a lot of human expression without contorting them too much. So yeah, it was all those factors. I think I just have fun drawing them. So at the end of the day.
I mean, similar in terms of the things getting outside of your head, and you talked about this a little bit already, but you've been solo on this for so many years. What was it like taking those voices out of your head and literally hearing them on the screen?
Really surreal and amazing. Like we auditioned so many people for some of the roles, and some of them we just like found them right away. Like, yeah, that's the voice. That's it. And some of them we had to do a fair bit of digging to find the right voice that matched up. But, you know, you have this thing in your head for so long, and it's just kind of like a scavenger hunt to try to find something that matches out there in the real world. I didn't have this like list of celebrity voice actors or anything that I really wasn't that.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Chris
Pratt. The only one, obviously.
Who else can he ask for?
That's all you can cast at this point. So I didn't really have a place to start, but we began with Michael Kovach, who does Rocky's voice, and he reached out to a bunch of, as it turns out, the voice actor community is very tight. A lot of them know each other, and he reached out to a bunch of people he knows in that profession, and they sent their reels in, and we just ended up with this treasure trove of amazing auditions and reels, and a lot of it boiled down to just not who was good, because they were all really good. It was just like who actually matches the tone and the right, like, you know, the right kind of voice for this character. So it was, and just getting to make that choice was an extreme privilege. Just, you know, listening to all these people who want to read for this character, it's like, wow.
This might be too big broad of a topic, so I'll try to hone in on it a little bit, but it's a weird time for animation, right? Like, in terms of theatrical animation, like we were just joking about, it's mostly celebrity voices. A lot of the voice community is being forced out. In terms of both streamers and TV, they're cutting down on animated shows a lot.
Yeah.
So was the original goal here to take this and like try to sell a TV, and then ultimately you're finding more success online? Is that something that's still a goal? Where are you sort of on that spectrum?
Yeah, the inception of it was Fable and I getting together to make a pitch packet for Lackadaisy. And we did that, and we shopped it around a little bit, and the feedback we kept getting was, this is a neat idea, it looks really cool, but Hollywood is very risk averse. They're never going to make this. So why don't you just go make your own cartoon and make your own pilot, make a proof of concept. And so Fable and I think we're both itching to make animation anyway. So we kind of just took that and ran with it. We're like, okay, let's do it. And so we went to Spike Trotman at Iron Circus, teamed up with her to do a Kickstarter for that pilot that we were talking about before. That's the 27-minute introduction to animated Lackadaisy. Yeah. And then after that came out, we got a surprising amount of interest from some pretty big places in Hollywood, and you know, surveyed the landscape and had a lot of discussions and meetings, and found that none of the options available at this time were looking particularly great. And we were seeing a lot of very promising things get put in a vault, thrown in the trash, get stuck in development hell, or get canceled after a year, or they'll order a season from you, but then they'll break it up into two or three seasons on streaming, and so that they can avoid paying you more for the next season and things like that. And it's really
beautiful,
kind of gross.
Beautiful process.
Yeah, and then along came the WGA and SAG-AFTRA strikes, and now it's looking like TAG may join them. We're like, yeah, it's time, because everything going on right now in that arena is kind of ugly and pretty much hostile territory, we felt, for animation. So we're like, maybe we just turn to the fan base and go like, hey, look, the best way to assure that this cartoon continues to exist, and that we have creative control of it and ownership of it, and that isn't going to get trash canned for a tax write-off, is for us to make it ourselves. And they apparently really wanted that, and they responded. So
I was gonna say, it seemed to work. It seemed to legitimately work.
Yeah. By the way, I apologize for this like light that's coming in here. It's just like
it's very beautiful. Dramatic. It's very the light dramatic. Of heaven shining down on the justice.
The animation gods have smiled on.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of drama. I love it.
I mean, like we're talking around here, it must be very validating, you know, this is a silly way of putting it, but like as soon as those YouTube views started to roll in, there's probably was a certain, what was the point where you're like, oh, this is bigger than we thought?
Yeah, I think as soon as we hit about that 24-hour mark and we were at 1 million views, and then it just skyrocketed from there to 2 million, we were like, okay, we could breathe a sigh of relief, because we didn't know when we released it what kind of response we were going to have. We were like, does anybody really want this? Is anybody going to be interested? Is it going to maybe like come out and maybe like totter its way to like 300K views? And then we'll have spent the past 3-ish years like toiling over this thing. You know, we had to kind of make peace with like, we did the absolute best we could. And
you sure
whatever happens,
it's
happens.
Amazing.
Thank you. And then we put it out, and the response was pretty incredible. So yeah, we were extremely relieved, extremely grateful for the outpouring of support that came in the wake of that. And so we figured we better grab that bull by the horns and make something out of it. So
the good news is that you got completely funded at this point for an entire season of animated television. The bad news is now you have to make that.
Yeah.
At this point, once the backing campaign is done in about 16 days, what's the process going to be like? What is not pressuring you at all? I'm not your boss, but what do you think the timeline is going to be in terms of turning this stuff around?
So we won't get the funds probably until mid-September or so. Just the way things work with BackerKit and Kickstarter and things of that nature is like the crowdfund ends and they have to do all the, you know, the card charging and everything, and then they take their cut, and Stripe fees take their cut, and then eventually you get, you know, the sum in your bank account. In this case, Iron Circus is executive producing it, and so they are handling all the budgetary stuff, payroll and everything. But we're planning to kind of hit the ground running at that point. So probably it'll be October when we're really, really getting into full, you know, hitting on all sixes at that point. Fable and I have been working on the scripts for the first few episodes already. We're doing some pre-production work at this time. So but we're probably not going to start releasing episodes until we have at least two episodes in the bag. We'll be stacking production on those. We weren't sure if we were going to be able to do that based on, it's all based on, like, the scope has to change based on the kind of funding we get. And so we were going to be like, well, if we're only going to do one episode, then that's what we'll do. And then we'll see what we can do after that if we can keep going. But because we've hit the goal for all five episodes of the season that we plan, we'll stack those episodes and start developing or producing both of them at the same time. And then we probably won't release episode one until episode two is also done. And then that way, a couple months after that, we can release episode two. So it'll probably be late 2024 when we start releasing episodes. But after that, we feel like we can steadily then release episodes every couple months. So that's
great.
And in between
great
the time,
takes time.
Yeah, I think a lot of people maybe don't understand. We actually like to share a lot of our production process, doing live streams and things like that, and talk about people, because then they get an understanding and appreciation for how much work actually goes into it, how many people have to be involved. In every second of animation that you see, there's like a laundry list of people who've had their hands on it. And even people behind the scenes you don't see, like the people who are doing the IT work and everything like that. So we like to be upfront about what our process is and share that with everybody so they understand why it's taking this long and, you know, why it costs the amount it does and everything. But yeah, I think, you know, we're trying to do our part there to develop a broader appreciation among animation fans of what it actually takes to make animations.
And just to kind of wrap up here a little bit, you obviously sound very, very busy with all of this stuff. But in between all of that, do you have any hankering to get back to the comic?
Very much so. Yeah. I've got Volume 3 of Black and Easy just waiting for me. And Spike at Iron Circus is not only the executive producer on the animation side of things. Iron Circus has its animation branch, which is what we're operating under, but also their publication of comic branch. And Spike has let me know I'm beholden to her for getting that Volume 3 done. So, and I agree, I really do want to get back to it. So Fable Siegel, the director on the pilot, will be the showrunner on season one. Mm-hmm. And so this whole production will really be in their capable hands. I'll be doing writing on the episodes. I'll probably be involved in some character design things and things of that nature. And I'll be there to consult about historical details and things, because I'm the 1920s nerd on the crew at this point. But yeah, I will be leaving the bulk of that work to Fable and our crew. And meanwhile, I'm very much looking forward to getting back to making comics, because I certainly have that itch to get drawing again. So yeah.
Cool. That's great.
Tracy, congratulations on everything. Yeah. Congratulations on the huge success. I can't wait to see more of this. The pilot is stunning. I think the rest of it's going to be great as well.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome. Tracy, have a great night.
Good night.
Good luck. Talk to you soon.
All right, there we go. Once again, Lackadaisy, you can check that out right now. Crowdfunding online. Obviously, they don't need the vaunted comic book club bump, but at the same time, you can go there anyway.
Give it anyway.
There's some great rewards, some great stuff that you can check out there, which we didn't mention.
Definitely worth watching. The pilot's
amazing. Watch the pilot.
Gorgeous. Absolutely. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And we are going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do
is...
Pete's going to learn.
That's a sound effect.
All you got to do is drop a question in the comments over at Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Not Twitter/X because that site sucks and they don't do that. But... Why don't I'm sorry.
Shots.
I'm coming at it. That was really hot. I'm sorry. I apologize. That was really mean to Twitter/X. What are you guys drinking tonight? I finished my delicious clarified whiskey sour.
The official chef. The official chef. Bullies.
I just want to emphasize again, so refreshing. Like, I don't necessarily expect a whiskey sour to be a refreshing drink. It was very nice.
You've clarified it.
Yeah, there you go.
And verbally and with the recipe. I was drinking I've been talking about infusing things a lot lately. I infused a mezcal with grapefruit and was having a infused mezcal with grapefruit juice and Aperol. That's the official drink of the summer. But I finished that pint glass of alcohol and I moved on to a Montauk Wave Chaser.
Ah, yeah, you love those. I'm infusing my body with beer, and I am drinking a little Lagunitas Daytime, my new favorite beer.
Pete, it's nighttime. It's nighttime.
Yeah, you gotta switch to night. You're never going to get to sleep if you keep drinking the daytime.
Yeah, it's like DayQuil and NyQuil.
No. If you drink enough of these, you pass out. It doesn't matter what time of day it is.
All right, why don't we get to some questions since we're getting a couple here already. This is... from Ben the Border Collie, do you all have a favorite gimmicky 90s type of comic, e.g. chromium, die cut, polybagged, etc.? If so, do you have a specific favorite version of that?
Ooh,
great question. And let me say I have two answers. One on the negative side. The polybagged with the trading card inside always stressed me out. Like Death of Superman, I was like, oh, boy, I got to open this. I'm going to rip it wrong. Oh, no. And then it left too much up in the air.
High stakes.
It is. I love a hologram. I love a gatefold. I love any sort of foil, shiny foil cover. I'm here for all that. The Robin, what was it, Robin 2, where they had the holographic centric card? Yeah. Give me that.
They did that for Fatal Attractions, too, right? The kickoff of all the X-Men books where they put the holographic cover. They put the little card on there.
Yeah, that's the little, cool. When you hold it up and it moves type of
thing. Was there a book that looked like Wolverine's claws had cut through it and like the cover?
Alex, get out of here. Of course. That's like 19 books.
No, but like there are holes in the cover, I mean. Like there are holes in the cover.
Yeah, that happened. That was in your imagination. That happened.
I forget the thicker card stock. die cut with the slashes through it. I couldn't name it, but I definitely picked up that cut.
And then when Wolverine lost his animantium, they had the claws, and it was a different kind of foil cover. And
there were shards of bone in the cover as well.
Yeah, and for
they sent you a piece of adamantium.
With every kind of new printing, they changed the color. So it started gold and then went to silver. So I had to get both because, the silver cover is closer to the real claw color, but the gold was the first printing, which I feel like they should have reversed.
How is your retirement fund going?
It's a 9.8, so it's looking good. You know what I mean?
Let me ask you.
CGC graded 9.8.
Yeah. When are you going to start selling those off for the cash?
Oh, dude, no, not yet, man. Not yet.
You're going to be buried in them, right?
Yeah, a few of them for sure.
Excellent.
I'll take 4 garbage plates, sir.
Real quick, because we got a plug here. Angel hit us up on the side, wanted to remind or mention and forgot to mention that Panicule Press is going to be at Baltimore Comic Con in September and New York Comic Con in October.
All right. Maybe I'll see him in the B-more.
There you go. This is from All in the Game. Oh, yes. What? Pete?
Didn't you send us an audience question? Is that...
Yes, I did. Wait, All in the Game. We'll come right back to this. I'm so sorry for the taunting and teasing. We got an email from Thor Axdal, who says, I have a question I'd like to hear you all discuss on the show, but due to my work, I'm never able to watch the live shows. So my question is this. What superhero character or book did you start off disliking, but eventually came around on? I used to think Daredevil was a horrible character before ever actually giving him a shot. Then I just started to do a long run read starting with the Marvel Knight stuff. It was a rough start with Smith's arc, but once I hit Bendis's run, I realized just how wrong I was. Now I'm on my third read through the series from 98 to present. Big fan. Listening to your shows are often the highlights of my week. Yes, that sounds depressing, but your show is just really, really good, brah. Thank you, Thor. Thank you, Thor. Very, very kind of you. Very sweet. What do you think, though? Was there a character that you didn't like initially that you eventually...
Well, I read this in the email, and I thought about it a little bit. And first off, I rarely come around on a character. You know, I either love you or I hate you. You know, I'm ride or die.
Yeah.
But... Far Sector made me come around a little bit on Green Lantern. I just thought it was stupid space police type of stuff. And then they were governed by these floating eggheads with no pants, which made no sense to me. But Far Sector really opened up my mind to that and the world to that. So, And I think also shout out
to... Was your problem specifically the lack of pants? I'm just having trouble parsing that sentence.
It was a combination of things that added up that made me think, I'm not having fun here. You know what I mean? This world that they created, it is not as enjoyable as they make it seem. Mm-hmm. Also, Francis Manapul's art made me think Flash was interesting for a minute or two. Not enough to, like, read the comic, but to buy it and look at it, for sure.
I think famously, you actually liked the Manapul writing run, where... Francis doing both, right?
I feel
like that was the one where you were the big proponent of that. And maybe Alex, the Flash fan, liked it less.
Yeah, I think so. Though I did like the art as well. I'll throw out, conversely to Pete, normally I don't like the Punisher at all, yet there have been multiple Punisher runs.
Come on!
That was
100% my answer as well.
Yeah.
Ooh.
The Jason Aaron run recently, I have, especially the focus on Maria, has been... was such a great... I love that story.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Well, I think that, but even like Garth Ennis's run on the title, that's something that I read begrudgingly. And then when I read it, it's really well written. There's great art throughout. So it's the sort of thing that even if I find the character frustrating whenever I see him in main Marvel and didn't love him going up to that, if a book is good, it's good, you know? So there you go.
Yeah. This I would also just throw out Superman real quick. I know the next question. I feel like is a character who is a little tricky sometimes, and I feel like lately Philip Kennedy Johnson, Joshua Williamson,
killing
the
it.
Runs that are happening now, Tom Taylor on the other Superman book. I've really been enjoying those so much.
Yep. This is from All in the Game. For real this time, are you all watching My Adventures with Superman? I checked out the first couple of episodes, thought it was great and very charming. Have you guys... taken a look yet.
Same. I'm going to definitely get into it more, but I watched the first two, I think. And I was like, oh, it's like a this show, for whatever reason, I feel like has been under the radar and just sort of mm-hmm. popped in, and it's delightful.
It's on my to-do list for sure, and I'm going to get to it. And we're definitely going to get to it.
What's it underneath? What are you waiting to cross off to get to it?
No, it's the top of the to-do list. I just got to...
it's the top?
Yeah.
Wow. Take out your garbage, man. Take out your garbage, brush your teeth. Oh. Please do those things first.
No, I don't... Those are automatic.
I would move brush your teeth to above my Adventure with Superman, but that's just me.
Smart.
Speaking of tasks, this is from Stray Beans. Can Justin grow a full beard, or is it patchy on the sides?
Patchy. It just comes in patchy. It's just how it works. You know, if I can speak for Justin here for a moment.
No, Pete always handles all of my facial hair questions, and that's always been the way it is.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
No, this is at full growth. I haven't done anything on this in, I don't know, years maybe?
So I'm right. So yeah, it just comes in patchy. That's all. Nothing wrong with that.
I'm at capacity here, and I love it.
This one is from Kevin. What are your favorite British comics? Just to throw out one right at the top here, there's a top of my head, but I'd say Ricky Gervais. He really just, you know, tells it like it is.
Oh my
like
God.
He doesn't care about anything. Oh, he'll just say whatever comes to his mind.
Wow, and... dude. I almost did a spit take there. Nice job, Zalvin. Well done, sir.
Thank you very much. But seriously, British comics, Pete.
Billy Connolly is a classic. Connolly. You know what I mean? That's come great. On.
British comics, what do you like? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff, but nothing I can pull out of the, you know, the ether.
I mean, this is top of mind because we were talking to Ramsey earlier, but a lot of the Judge Dredd stuff obviously is very good. What else? I don't know. I read most of those British people when they came over here and they became relevant to my
I definitely country. Growing up
because I'm a terrible person.
I'm glad you're saying that out loud. I definitely grew up reading 2000 AD for sure.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite
about British stuff?
Yeah,
British comics. Beads on Toast.
Come on, man.
Bangers and Hulk Smash. Oh, Bangers and Hulk Smash.
Bangers and Smash. That's pretty good. Again, we're terrible people. Just real quick, Ben the Border Collie says Wolverine number 50, where his claws slice through the cover is mine. That's exactly the one that I was thinking.
That's what you're talking about, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Ben.
Here we go. Kevin says, on paperback books, I've always liked embossing, so why not on comics as
Ooh,
well?
Ooh, nice, Kevin.
I love an embossed cover.
Yeah, boss it up.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I always liked it on paperbacks. Oh, he said he liked it on paperbacks. I can't read it.
All right, Alex. All right. Is Kevin you? Is Kevin just an alt?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's my
Kevin
alt.
Your bot?
He's my alt. This is from Stray Bullet. I just got back from California Legoland and I'm still in it.
Oh, nice.
Alex built that awesome bat cave in the background. Is there a Lego set you'd like to see that doesn't exist yet?
Ooh. Wow.
Comic book club.
Yeah. Lego Pete. Lego comes with own garbage plate.
Yeah.
And just each of our tiny Lego heads. In rectangles, talking about comics?
I'm a huge fan of Legos. I've always wanted to do the Millennium Falcon. I don't know. What's that? Yeah, I know that
it exists.
Yeah, I know. I worked at FAO Schwarz and worked in the Lego department. I had many arguments with children about the fact that we could never keep Millennium Falcon on the shelves. Stop kids from stealing the Chewbacca out of the box.
A lot of people are like, oh, if you had a time machine, go kill Hitler, go do all this other stuff. Yeah. I would go back and just observe Pete working at FAO Schwarz.
I almost got fired every day, bro.
That's what I'm saying. I always want to see you talking to kids, I guess fighting with them in some way. It seems like. Mm-hmm. Great.
What else? Any other...
Oh, yeah. Stray Beans, Lock and Key Lego would be amazing.
Lock and Key Lego. I would buy that in a second.
Yeah, definitely.
That's amazing.
This is from Derek Maynard. Says, are they bringing back the Punisher too soon? For anybody who doesn't know, there is a new version of the Punisher who's going to show up. I think his name is like, instead of Frank Castle, it's like Tom Fortress or something like that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you see what they did there? Do you see? You see what they did there?
Yeah. It's like Joe Stoneboards or something.
Like Stoneboards.
Yeah, something very basic. That's how you build a house out
Joe Skullchest.
Yeah, I don't know. Pete, you're the resident Punisher fan. What do you think about them bringing back a new Punisher?
A new Punisher?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tough character right now, so I'm excited for any Punisher. I'm not going to be mad at anything until I've read it, so I remained That's optimistic.
That is decidedly not true, and I only say
Frank
that
Frank Castle is also a Punisher, and you hated that, so yeah. I feel like your answer is... All right, and let me throw this out to you. What is essential for you to have in a Punisher? I've been wanting to ask you this, because assuming the story is not family picnic based for this new guy, what if he's just like, I kill people, and I wear this shirt?
Wow, that's
enough.
Yeah, I don't know. What if instead of a picnic, he's at like a food truck rally or something like that?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so different. What a different world. No, yeah, that's the thing.
What if the rest of his like after work kickball team got killed at a food truck? Is that the modern equivalent for?
Wow. Yeah, that's first of all, that's you got to have vengeance for your kickball team. You know, if anybody's on the kickball team out there and somebody gets murdered, you better avenge
Do you
them.
Think if that happened, would he become the Punisher or would he become the kickball? And he's like,
I don't think he
like bounces around and kicks people or something like that to death.
Yeah.
No, it's not like Speedball or anything like that. I think to answer your question, seriously, Justin, I think it's someone who is broken by loss, who has felt a love so great that when it's ripped away from them, they don't want anybody else to be hurt in a similar manner. They go on a mission to make a difference or try to do things that others can't so other people won't be hurt in a similar manner. Stuff like that is what I think the Punisher is about.
That's a beautiful answer. So the kickball thing does work then.
Yeah, the kickball thing definitely falls under that.
Let me say this. I would much rather, I'm curious to see what the new Punisher backstory is. And I think the backstory of the Punisher is the more limited Batman. He's like the Marvel Batman origin. And I think the origin is very important to the character. If you don't have the origin, it doesn't really work. I want to follow Frank Castle in Weird World that Jason Aaron set up. That to me is very interesting.
Very interested in that.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, and that is it for your audience question.
Oh.
Boop, 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 boop. It is now time for trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. Hey, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. If you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Or, of course, if you're starving and maybe want to slowly poison yourself, you can go to Long John Silver's, too. We have that available as an option. But Zelbatron, do we have a volunteer or do we need a volunteer?
They're going to raise
question.
Their hand in the
comments. Yeah, we need a volunteer. If somebody just wants to say me, 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 or whatever in the comments, we'll get to you, and it'll be on a weird 15-20-second delay.
Or there's that all... you know, we donate to charity or the writer's strike or something.
Or a charity. Yeah, we can donate to a charity.
Yeah. But it's Stray Bullets is suggesting a charity.
Yeah, I don't know if he's raising
his hand.
He's our chef.
He's just our, you know, we should listen to him and go with charity.
Maybe if he won trivia, he could earn his way back into the chef position that he lost recently.
First off, stop saying that, okay? He has not lost his position. He's been nothing but amazing. Don't say that about him.
Great. Okay, well, that just seems like what happened.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we just, Justin, you take the quiz, and then we'll donate to charity.
Derek Mainhart, I just passed the Long John Silvers on a road trip, and I thought of you guys.
Oh,
that was the end goal. We could wrap up the podcast now.
Hey,
now
we did it. We did it. We can retire.
Great. So what do you want to play for? Donate to the WGA or something like that?
Sure.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Artist Fund.
Okay, take it away. And if you don't get this, Justin, we're going to take even more money away from the writers.
Wow.
Great.
Wow. No pressure, buddy.
I'm going to get an extra Netflix account.
Wow. This is really... Kevin, I can do it next week. Doing it is literally just commenting. But yes, I will do it.
All right, here we go. Today's trip is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend... Mark Margolis, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go, Justin. Question number one. The Loki and McDonald's collab has been called blank. Is it A, delicious, B, deeply bizarre, or C, Gary Munch?
Wow, Gary Munch, strong answer, because it's food related.
And just to give some context here, they weren't supposed to reveal this until August 14th, but then somebody worked at McDonald's just showed a big box of their Loki sweet and sour sauce. I was like, check it out, get it at McDonald's now, so everybody knows what it is. Real quick, while we're waiting for Justin's answer here, Pete, are you gonna slurp some of that Loki sauce?
Oh, yeah.
Put some of that sweet Loki sauce in your mouth.
You know, it,
I would argue that Loki sauces would be a trick. He's a trickster.
He Do you think they're gonna be green? Sauce. It has to be green sauce, right?
But it also has to be like too sour or something, right? It has to be like,
yummy. Do you think?
I've got you, brother.
Yeah. Brother,
your acting is really just phenomenal.
Deeply weird, was that B?
Yes, it is. Well done, Justin. B is correct. Here we go. Question two: in the new Gotham War, who will be going up against bats? Is it A, Catwoman? B, REM sleep. That's a Night Terrors joke. Or C, Dan Marino?
I mean, Dan Marino is a great villain. Remind me of the time when I really made Dan Marino mad at me specifically.
Wait, that's a real story?
That's a real story. I made Dan Marino very, very mad.
Well, I wish we had some sort of podcast where we could talk about all of our tales from the biz, but alas, answer the question.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fun tease. We're going to have that coming soon.
In our Aquaman 2 podcast, we can talk about Dan Marino. he's such a famous dolphin. I guess I'll go with A.
A is correct. It's going to be Cat versus Bats in the new Gotham War. I'm excited for it. Here we go. Question number three. What is being called the hilarious and heartwarming new animated series you need right now? Is it A, Strange Planet, B, The Snorks, or is it C, Will Kickerbocker?
That last name is definitely made up. And I know for a fact, when Pete doesn't have an answer for something, he says The Snorks. So I'm going to go with A.
A is correct, buddy. You killed it.
Wow.
Got all three right.
Excellent. All right. We are going to go to Bob Iger's house and delete his Disney Plus account. That's what we're going to do for you.
Nice.
Yes, that's the kind of trivia response I want. Pete, let me ask, when you know someone for so long, do you think people that knew Alex Trebek for like 20 years were like, I know all these answers, you sucker. I'll say every answer right away.
I don't know.
What was your secret movie, Pete?
Of course, it's talking about the 1994 cult comedy Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Cult comedy?
That was a huge hit.
It was a small indie thing that maybe launched one of the biggest comedians' careers of all time.
Hold on, because this is a little bone that I have to pick with folks. It made $107.2 million.
Bumblebee Tuna proves that it is not a small comedy.
That's Ace Ventura 2: When Nature Calls, but I appreciate the ref.
Alrighty then, can we move on? As we all know, new comic books are coming out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out this week, Pete?
Oh man, there's a lot of great stuff that I'm looking forward to talking to you guys about, especially some fun stuff to fight over. But Night Terrors number 3 was amazing. Ghost Rider Wolverine Weapons of Vengeance number 1 was awesome. And Guardians of the Galaxy number 5.
Justin, what about you?
You know, I got to shout out our guys making the Enfield Gang Massacre number 1. This is from the That Texas Blood team that I love and have been blowing the toot-to-toot trumpet for quite some time. Definitely check out Enfield
Gang. Well, also, I should mention, we did a dedicated podcast with them in the Comic Book Club feed where we interviewed them specifically about this book.
We should have talked to them about the book.
Oh, my God. We did it about a month ago, so now that the book is coming out, go back, listen to it. We didn't get too spoilery, but they talked a lot about the process, which I thought was very cool.
Yes. Great up.
I am going to give a shout-out to Mech Cadets, number 1 from Boom Studios, written by Greg Pak. This is him bringing his title, Mech Cadet U, back right before it hits Netflix later this month in an animated series. So very cool to see that. I was also going to give Enfield Gang Massacre a shout-out. And there was something. Oh, Barnstormers, number two from
Dallas Comics.
Yes.
Fresh off of an Eisner win, this book is a wild 1920s adventure with like kind of a Bonnie and Clyde with a little bit of a twist. Really, really good. So good. And oh, and we got a plug here for Swan Songs number two. Yes, from W. Maxwell Prince.
Yeah, thank you, Derek.
Very excited about that as well. All right, and that is it for this week's show. Bunch of people to thank. Thank you, Ramsey, for coming on. Check out Mega City Max in stores tomorrow. Also, Angel Fuentes for coming out and talking about Petticoat Press and everything going on. Be sure to check out all of their books. Tracy Butler for talking about Lackadaisy. That is crowdfunding right now, or you can check out the pilot on YouTube, and it is awesome. Next week, we're going to have another big show for you. Oscar Osorio is going to be here to talk about The Neverending Adventure. And John Klassen is going to be here to talk about The Skull, a Tyrolean folktale. So that should be fun. Lots of podcasts to plug. As mentioned earlier, check out Comic Book Club News, our new 5-minute news podcast that rolls out daily. As long as I can keep up the pace, we'll see what happens.
Alex is nervous.
No, it's fine. I'm fine. Also, Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, rolling out weekly with news and views. This week, we're going to have a Blue Beetle reread for
you. Oh, man, that sounds fun.
Yeah, you should have come on, Pete. Also, Marvel Vision, or Marvel podcast, also rolling out weekly, finally free of the shackles of Secret Invasion. Riverdale After Dark, or Riverdale podcast, counted down the last 3 episodes of the show ever. It's all
come on, Bughead. Come on, Bughead. Everything's coming up, Bughead.
Oh, I have some bad news for you. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody. Take care of yourself out there.